County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than up-and-coming Worcestershire County Cricket Club top-order batsman, Jack Haynes. So Jack, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, it's been nice, thank you. I've been lucky enough to get away to South Africa for a couple of months, so enjoying the sunshine and not to rub it in, but it's been really nice. I'm enjoying it.
Lucky for some, eh? I can't say the same, to be honest. In terms of the weather, Jack, here in Warwickshire, just looking out of my window right now, it's gloomy, it's dark, it's cold. It's about 5 degrees here in the Midlands. What's it like in South Africa? And which bit of South Africa as well?
It's pretty warm. I'm in Cape Town for 3 months, so I'm quite lucky at the moment. It's been pretty hot. I'm not great in the heat, it's pretty nice. Apparently it's cracking flags in Worcester today, so you live on the wrong side of the Midlands.
We're not getting into this already, Jack. There's plenty of podcasts left for some Bears versus Pears rivalry, which I assure you listeners we'll get into. Don't you worry. Whenever we have a Bear and a Pear on the podcast, it comes up, trust me. But we'll hold our horses for the time being. We've got plenty of time to discuss that rivalry as the episode progresses. But just before we get into the main content of today's podcast, basically, I'm going to be chatting to Jack about his earliest cricketing memories. Then a large chunk of the podcast will, of course, surround Worcestershire County Cricket Club. And then we'll end today's episode with some, albeit very interesting, Twitter questions, to say the least. I won't spoil them just yet, Jack, but there's some very, very rogue ones, to say the least, in particular, from one of your former teammates. But before we get into all of that good stuff then, Jack, I want to transport you all the way back to the origin of your cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this incredible game?
So my first ever memories really would have been sort of playing in the garden as a sort of, I guess, 2-3 year old, playing with the garden. My brother, who's a couple of years older than me, and my dad, who used to play for Worcester as well. So I was very lucky in that sense. Cricket was always sort of in the family. So grew up sort of playing in the back garden with dad and my brother. And as soon as I was sort of old enough to get some pads on, that they were on, and I was hitting balls.
Fair enough. A nice journey into the game then. So very much family orientated and very locally driven as well, given that connection to Worcestershire County Cricket Club. And it's interesting there actually that you mentioned your dad, because I always ask this when we talk about that family connection in professional cricket. Was there ever any pressure for you to emulate your father and go into the world of cricket, or did you never feel that per se?
No, I never really felt it. Dad's had like a pretty big part to play in my career so far. He's been brilliant. But no, never any pressure really. It was almost just always, if you want to play, then play and go and enjoy it. But it's very much sort of my career, and he's just there to sort of help me along the way.
Fair enough. So a very, very strong connection between you two then. And it's good to hear that there wasn't that pressure.
Definitely. No, not at all. Not at all. Always just play to sort of enjoy the game. And if it happened, it happened. And luckily I'm in a situation where I can play cricket for a living now, which is obviously brilliant.
I was about to say, that's exactly what's happened. Here you are on the back of playing for Worcestershire, having played for England under-19s as well. It's funny, isn't it? That's why I always like the origin story, because it's interesting to see how people have progressed and the path that they've taken into the professional game. And talking of the professional circuit at both a county and maybe an international level, aside from your dad and aside from those family influences, I suppose, did you have anyone in the world of professional cricket that you tried to emulate and model your game off of in those formative years, per se?
I wouldn't say anyone like specifically in particular, there's obviously a lot of players you look up to. I remember sort of the main sort of England team and the core group sort of growing up would have been, your Ian Bell, your Alistair Cook, your Strauss, and they were sort of like the core players. So when Ian Bell was lucky enough that he was our under 19 batting coach, so that was pretty special. Grew up watching him win Ashes series home and away, and ended up sort of at the other end of a net to him, which was obviously pretty special. So those guys, and then obviously your Joe Roots of more recent times, and then in a more local basis, blokes like Daryl Mitchell, who unfortunately just retired last year, but we had to share a dressing with him for the last couple of years after watching him score thousands of runs at New Road, was pretty special. So yeah, just those sort of guys. No one in particular, but a good group of people you sort of watch and think, cool, should play like them.
Absolutely. And a nice mix there. Obviously, Ian Bell, absolute legend. My favourite ever cricketer, to be honest, for obvious reasons. Achieved everything in an England shirt and, of course, in a Bears shirt as well. Joe Root, one of England's greatest ever to wear a Test shirt. And Daryl Mitchell, we had him on. He was one of our more original guests here on the Cowns Cricket Podcast. Great bloke. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, he is. Legendary brilliant, guy. Brilliant bloke. A massive Villa fan, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, yeah.
Also a keen darts player. I won't ruin that. For anyone who wants to go and listen, you can find that in our archives. But Daryl Mitchell, definitely worth the listen. He was an absolute delight to have on the podcast. And Jack, just a question, actually, with regards to, we'll choose those three. And I'm guessing you've probably spent a lot of time with Daryl Mitchell over the years. But let's say that you could have one net session with one of those players over the years, right? Ian Bell, Joe Root, Daryl Mitchell, he could teach you some bowling, to be fair, as well. Who would you choose and why in a dream net session?
I'd probably have to go with Joe Root, just because I've experienced the sort of Ian Bell and Daryl Mitchell. So I think I'd have to go with Joe Root, just because I've never sort of met him really. And I'd sort of love to pick his brain about how he goes about his batting. And now he's, done so well. So I think I'd go with Joe Root.
Not a bad option, that, to be honest. Mm. I can't say the same when it comes to having a net with Ian Bell or Daryl Mitchell or Joe Root, in fact. So I can't exactly relate it with that. I'll choose Ian Bell, as you can probably tell. I need the help, to be fair, Jack. My batting average, 11.5 in village cricket. It needs it.
It needs it. It can go up, though. Can go up.
Yeah, but at the same time, Jack, it can go down. So we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see what 2022 has in store for the cricket connoisseur. But in terms of that pathway into cricket then, going back onto Worcestershire, before we talk about your first team debut and your journey at the club so far, Jack, I had a little bit of a profound question. You might not find it too deep or philosophical, but I think it's always quite a nice question to ask. And that is basically, when was the moment that cricket really clicked for you? Was there a moment, was there a catalyst in your life up to this date, I suppose, when you kind of look back and you go, that was when I wanted to become a professional cricketer?
Looking back, I don't think there's been a specific date that I can sort of think of. It's always just sort of been, my biggest hobby as a, from a three-year-old to a 21-year-old now. It's always been sort of core and forefront of my life. Obviously, you go to school and you do that, but I sort of went to school to be able to play cricket, and obviously school offers a good distraction to be able to play cricket. But I think just all the way growing up, really, I can't think of a specific time, but it's always sort of been, as I said, in my family and growing up playing most days in the summer and even in the off season. So it's just sort of naturally become a progression. I don't think there's a time where it sort of clicked, where it might have done for other people, but it's just always sort of been there and always been sort of my main passion.
Fair enough. And again, you've got to live the life, haven't you? Professional cricketer at the age of 21. Not bad at all, not bad at all. And of course, Worcestershire, one of the 18 first-class counties. They are a big club here in England and Wales. Of course they are. They've won plenty of trophies over the years and lots of legendary players have walked through those gates at New Road and played for the Pears. In terms of your debut, Jack, what do you remember from that occasion? And also, I suppose, as a local lad, just how special was that for you to go out onto that field for the first time as a player of Worcestershire County Cricket Club?
Yeah, it was very special. I wouldn't say kind of nowhere and away, because I remember being away on sort of a 19s sort of summer competition, I suppose. You're playing, I think we had India and Bangladesh in like a tri series that summer, and they were getting a call saying that there's a chance that I was going to play in the Australia game, and that this was sort of going to be my debut. And we're thinking, oh, well, that'd be great if it happens, but we'll sort of see in a couple of weeks' time, because it wasn't for a couple of weeks. And then got the call saying that I was going to play, and it was, I guess a shock, but also like filled with excitement and a lot of nerves at the same time. And then for it to be against Australia was pretty mad, I suppose. Not something you expect, not the team you expect to make your debut against. And then I just remember sort of, I was still at school at the time, and that summer, and just being thinking, I'm going to go and play against the Aussies, and this could be ridiculous. And it was, it was a crazy few weeks, really. But now, obviously, thoroughly enjoyed it. And then I remember turning up to the ground and seeing the Australian boys that you've watched on the television, and it's my first game, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure I should be here, but no, it was a brilliant, brilliant occasion, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
As you should. I mean, that must be a fantastic, fantastic experience. Very much the definition of a baptism by fire going against Australia. I mean, as we've seen over the winter, what their bowling attack is capable of, in particular the seamers, and of course, Nathan Lyon, potent, potent bowling attack at the Aussies' disposal at the moment. From that debut, this might be a tough question, actually, because there's a lot of candidates from the Australian team that are supposed to fit the bill for this, but who's the most difficult to face?
I've probably said Josh Hazlewood. I think he nicked me off first ball, and I think I was dropped at third slip. So that would have been an interesting start. But luckily I was dropped, and then I managed to face start for a few balls, and it went okay. I think I got 20 odd, and actually felt okay. And then I think Hazlewood got me with a sort of back at me on the pad before I sort of knew it, and it was all sort of over in a flash. But no, it was obviously brilliant. And just so exciting to play against blokes you've watched on television and seen sort of run through teams, and it was a pretty cool experience. And to get a few was nice, only 20 odd, but it was probably 20 odd more than some people expect. So no, it was good. But I'd say Hazlewood probably the most skillful out of that, and you can see that in the Ashes Test matches, and you feel for the England boys when they're batting against that attack.
It's a ridiculously potent attack, isn't it? You think you've got Cummins and Hazlewood. You got Mitchell Stark in there, the breakthrough specialist. Then you've got Nathan Lyon. If you've survived the trial by seam, you've got to go up against arguably one of the best off spinners on the planet right now. Him and Ravi Chandran Ashwin kind of inhabit their own ecosystem in the global off spin department in Test cricket. And even nowadays, you've got Cam Green as well. Cam Green is someone who's rapidly rising through the ranks. It must be an incredible challenge to face the Aussies. I can't say that I faced them, to be honest, Jack, unsurprisingly. I definitely wouldn't get 20. I'd probably take up 20 balls and get out for a duck, or get one lucky run down to third man. But no, that's a pretty cool debut, I have to admit. Very, very cool indeed. And before we talk about the under-19s, because that's something I want to focus on in particular, in terms of the lessons you learned, in terms of the journey in South Africa itself, I did promise a little bit of chat about the Bears versus Pears rivalry, as we do on the podcast. With a resident Bears fan, we've got a resident Pears guest. What are your first ever memories of Warwickshire versus Worcestershire as a rivalry, in terms of maybe going to matches or playing in them? What are your kind of, first memories of that fixture?
Yeah, it's always just sort of been that, I suppose, just meant that a little bit more, even just looking at the fixtures growing up, looking at the scorecards, and obviously wanting Worcester to win every game, but then looking at them and it was a Worcester-Warwickshire game, and being even more sort of disappointed if we hadn't won, or obviously excited if we had won, which was more often than not. So that was always good. so it was, but no, it's just always a little bit more. And I've been lucky enough to play in a couple over the last year or two. And they're just, they just do that, mean that a little bit more. And, playing against your local sort of rivals. And you can see that the supporters, usually more turn up, and the Bears Pairs T20 is always a pretty big occasion. So it's just brilliant.
It most certainly is. And Jack, just for the listeners out there who maybe aren't as familiar with the rivalry itself, we do play for a trophy, don't we? The Norman Gifford Trophy.
Norman Gifford Trophy, yeah.
Exactly. An iconic trophy here in the Midlands, one which has great pride and prestige for whoever actually holds the trophy at the moment. Can you remind us which county holds that trophy at the moment?
I think it could be you. It could be just, you know, a one-off. We'll win it back next year, that's what I say.
We'll have to wait and see, won't we, Jack? We'll have to wait and see. To be fair, we've got a few games, haven't we, in the T20s?
We do. Yeah. It's the first one you sort of look for in the calendar. So,
yeah, it is. And to be fair, as much as we do have our banter and there is that rivalry, you know, it's nothing silly, is it? It's a good rivalry. It's one where, you know, the fans respect one another for the game, obviously. We're supporting our teams very vociferously. But after that, I mean, I've never had a bad experience at Worcestershire at all. The ground is pretty nice. They could do with some floodlights just so we can have a night game. But other than that,
it's pretty nice.
No, but as I said, it's a good rivalry. It really is. And as I said, you know, coming into this season, it's going to be interesting to see the T20s between our two sides. We'll have to wait and see who holds that trophy by the end of the 2022 season. But before we get on to 2021 then, Jack, and we talk about your experiences in last year's competitions for the Pairs, I just had to talk about your experiences in the Under-19 World Cup in 2020. Unfortunately for England, it didn't quite go to plan, did it? Let's be honest, finishing ninth. I think a lot of us expected more than that, considering the amount of talent that was available in that squad. When did you get the call up? That's what I want to ask first and foremost. And how did you react to getting on that plane to South Africa?
Yeah, so it all started with a pre-World Cup trip to Antigua, which was sort of, you know, not a bad place to go for a pre-World Cup trip. Very nice place. And the Caribbean was brilliant. And so we got a call to say that we were on that. And then I think we had maybe 15 or 16 lads on that. And then we took 14 or 15 to the World Cup, if I remember correctly. So we found out the last day in Antigua. So, you know, it was fairly nervous times coming into the end of the trip. You know, we wanted to prove yourself and prove that you should be on the plane. So, no, it was obviously, you come back home for Christmas after that trip, pretty excited. Obviously, to get home for Christmas with your family, but then also to know that you're going to the World Cup in the new year. So that was pretty special. That was brilliant. We had a great group of lads, to be fair. You know, a lot of us still stay in touch and a lot of lads doing very well around the county circuit. So it was, as you say, disappointing that we finished ninth and didn't get a crack at the knockout stages. But no, I've got nothing but fond memories of playing in the Under-19s and disappointing World Cup for us, but also, you know, a lot of learnings and a lot of enjoyment along the way.
Exactly. And we'll start with enjoyment before the learnings, because obviously that is the whole point of the competition. It's to learn those lessons to set you on the right path in professional cricket. But in terms of the real highlights, I can already kind of gather what this might be from your personal perspective, Jack. But what was your standout moment from your World Cup journey in South Africa?
Standout moment from the World Cup. I mean, it probably would be that. I'd probably say it was that Sri Lanka game, the last game that we played. You know, the group stage games were, we didn't perform our best, which was disappointing. But then to sort of finish on a high in a way and beat a decent Sri Lankan side and to go out on a win was pretty pleasing. So that I'd probably say that was the highlight.
Yeah, not surprised at all by that, to be honest. It was a pretty good partnership that as well with Dan Mosley. Whichever variation of his surname you want to use.
Mosley, I go for.
So do I. Mosley.
Rolls off the tongue.
Exactly. And also, I was told by a couple of his teammates at Kenilworth Wardens Cricket Club that they used to call him Housey Mosley. But in terms of your performances, Jack, just to give the listeners a bit of context with regards to that tournament, 138 runs at 34.5 across four games, including a 68 against Sri Lanka, in that 142-run stand with Dan Mosley. Good partnership, that, in the plate final in Benoni. So pretty good tournament, to be honest, with regards to that 68. That was an excellent knock. But in terms of the lessons, because that is the big takeaway from any Under-19 World Cup, it's about learning those lessons and implementing those into your game. What was the biggest lesson that you learned from your time out in South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a few things, and
you come away with a lot of food for thought from a competition like that. And you look at sort of, you're playing as the best teams in the world. And you look at the teams, like the Bangladesh, the Indians, who got to the semi-finals, finals. And you just think, how do we get to that level? And how do some of our best players and some of our players become just as good, if not better, than their best players? And so you take a lot away from looking at other people, seeing how they go about their business, brought up in completely different conditions in different countries, and they've outperformed us on that stage, for example. So, you take a lot from that. And then probably from a more personal point of view, a decent tournament, but, a lot of starts. A 60, I think a few 30s, which is great. But, I should have been one of the guys to stick my hand up and take us to a couple of wins in the group stage of the tournament. If I, turn that into an 80 or 100, then, you might win the game and book yourself a place in the knockout stages. So, disappointing in one way, but that's probably the biggest learning in terms of taking it deeper and going on.
It's a valuable lesson to learn, isn't it? And one which lots of cricketers, to be honest, should learn in their cricketing journey, because you got to be there right at the end. If you're in, you've got to stay in. Go big, take your team across the line. If you can, of course, cricket, that makes it sound so easy. It's a lot more difficult than that out in the middle. And I can imagine it's even more difficult in the professional arena. But, it is a very, very vital lesson to learn. And actually, Jack, with regards to that, I would like to know a little bit about your psychology in terms of those starts. Do you break it down in any way? Because I was having a chat with Bex Garrard, actually, on our Under-19 World Cup review show. And she mentioned about talking with James Roux and going 25, 50, 7500. So breaking it up into four 25-run segments. Do you implement any strategies like that, or do you look at it differently, per se?
It's very much sort of game dependent, I suppose. For me, sort of some of the best things I've played have been when you're purely playing the game situation. So you're playing and you're chasing scores, so you're trying to set targets, and you do sometimes set yourself little targets. I want to be here at this stage, and if we can get to here, we'll only need a certain amount of runs per over in the last 10, for example. And then, I spoke to different coaches in terms of breaking it down, maybe go 5 runs at a time, and it doesn't necessarily always work for me. I try and keep it fairly simple when I'm out there. Sometimes can be a bit of an overthinker technically and with my game. So I try and go out there and keep it pretty simple, focus on my processes and hopefully the runs will come. But I've used it in the past, definitely, breaking those game situations down. We talked a lot of the 19s about going in sort of 5 over chunks, talking to your partner, working in partnerships. You mentioned that Dan Mousey partnership. It was sort of, I remember speaking about it, really. You'd go for 5 overs and we'd say, right, we'll see where we are on 5 overs. Not going to go yet. We'll see where we are on 5 overs. And that can be really powerful, I think. And you saw, James Roux do that brilliantly in the final, and you can see how he played so well.
You absolutely can. And the reason why I asked that, not only was that for that partnership and the 68 against Sri Lanka, but one knock in particular from 2021, one which I think kind of announced you, to be honest, to the wider county collective. And that was the game against Essex at New Road, 153. That was an absolutely outstanding knock. In terms of that day, how did you set about in terms of your approach? Did you go out there with a particular, kind of strategy, a way of implementing your batting on that day, or did that just come naturally again?
Not massively. I'd had like a steady start to the 50 over comp, and I was probably fairly high in confidence. So I just sort of went in trusting my game and thought, opening that 50 over comp, you feel if you can get through the power play and you're in decent position, then you've got a decent chance of going and getting a big one, I think. The pitch was brilliant, to be fair, and Brett at the other end was fantastic. So it was just a case of see ball, hit ball. It was just happened to be one of those days, and luckily it was my day. But no, it was a special day and, a thoroughly enjoyable one.
I have to ask. In fact, I'll give a little bit of context before I ask the question. But again, just for the listeners out there, 19 boundaries, so 19 fours, 2 sixes from 128 balls, with Brett D'Oliveira at the other end smashing a 123. And Worcestershire went on to win the game by 182 runs in a one-day game. That is a massive, massive margin against a side which went on to reach the semi-finals of the comp as well. So a crushing victory for the pair, shall we say. And the reason why I wanted to ask about that knock in particular Jack, you may have different thoughts on this actually, but would you say that that was your proudest moment in a Worcestershire shirt so far, or has something else topped it?
Yeah, no, I definitely would say it is. It's obviously pretty special getting your first 100 for your county. It probably made it a little bit more special by missing out a couple of times in the Red Bull games and not quite getting over the line. And then finally being able to do it in the White Bull game. I'd say that's my proudest moment so far.
And rightfully so, 153. Not bad at all, with a lovely strike rate as well. And in terms of the flip side of that, because as we all know, cricket, it'd be a wonderful game if it was all upwards trajectory. And we only had good moments, we only had those highs, we only scored centuries and took fifers. But unfortunately, that isn't how cricket goes. We have highs, we have lows, we have peaks, we have troughs. You have dry spells. That is just the nature of the cricketing beast. Jack, what would you say has been your toughest moment from your time at Worcestershire so far? Has there been a particular moment or a particular period, I suppose, which has really proven to be quite difficult for you on a personal level?
There's nothing that particularly stands out. Look, not scoring runs is obviously always fairly difficult. And there's been, I've been through a couple of patches in the summer of, playing two or three games and some pretty low scores, which was disappointing. I think back to the game against Middlesex last year towards the end, and a couple of low scores. Just felt like I didn't play particularly well. You can sort of accept it sometimes if you feel like you're playing okay and something happens, but I didn't feel like my game was in great order. And came out at the end of the season with a couple of decent scores, so I felt a bit better towards the end. But probably I'd say that Middlesex game, I just felt like maybe a little bit low on confidence, or a little bit just the game wasn't quite right for that time. And then I think maybe just missing out at the start of the season this year was disappointing. Not starting the season, but these things happen, and that was a low. But managed to get back into the side later on in the summer. So peaks and troughs of the game. But that's why we love it.
Exactly. And you know what? When you do become a real icon of the game, people only ever seem to remember your good moments as well. When do we ever talk about Sachin Tendulkar, for example, scoring a duck, or Sir Alistair Cook? We don't. We talk about their centuries. We talk about their match-winning moments. Again, that's what's important. You have to focus on the positives. But when you are low on confidence, especially as a top-order batsman, because there's immense pressure, as we all know, and I suppose, again, we talk about nature of the beast, we talk about the nature of the game. As a top-order batsman, more times than not, you are going to fail. That's just how it is. You're facing a new ball, there's lateral movement, you're facing talented bowlers. You can't score a century every single game as much as the fans want you to. How do you deal with those expectations? And in particular, how do you bounce back from those periods, those spells, where the confidence has taken a bit of a knock?
Yeah, I think for me, a lot of it comes from a preparation in terms of, I've always been one for hitting quite a lot of balls and training hard and feeling like I can go into the game with as much chances as I give myself the best chance of scoring runs, and that's always important for me. So if I feel like I've prepared as well as I can, and I go out and give my best, and it happens. I mean, it's easier said than done here in the winter saying that, but definitely in terms of that. And then, training really hard, doing as much as I can, and then going out there and playing. And then also just trusting yourself. If it's worked for you before, then don't throw it all away if you've had a couple of low scores. I think not trying to change too much. Speaking to a couple of the more experienced guys at Worcester, or a couple of coaches I've had in the past, it's quite easy to change a massive amount in your game when you think things aren't going quite well. I think that can be quite detrimental. So, just maybe tinkering with the odd thing is fine, but knowing that there's nothing detrimental in your game and not trying to change something too big is pretty important as well.
It is indeed, because at the end of the day, that technique has got you to that standard. So something must be right. And yes, you can have little technical faults which can be smoothed out, they can be ironed out over the years as you hone your craft. But it is important, unless there's a real need, a desperate need for wholesale change, stick with the same course for the most part. Definitely some very, very wise advice for any young up and cricketers out there. And Jack, just one final thing actually, with regards to, I suppose, 2021. What would you say was the biggest lesson that you learned from that season? Looking back, obviously from the club's perspective, you could argue it was a little bit of an underwhelming one by Worcestershire standards, considering how well they've done in white ball cricket in particular in the last few years, winning the Blast in 2018, for example. What do you say was the biggest lesson, the biggest takeaway from that season?
The biggest takeaway, yeah. As you said, look, it was a fairly disappointing year for us in terms of probably both red ball and white ball cricket. You know, some really good patches of cricket that we played, so it was disappointing not to sort of do that more often. Biggest learning probably comes when, and it's very similar to what I had at the World Cup, and it's slightly different because it's in a slightly different format, I suppose. But, you know, several times this year, again, got myself in and just didn't quite go on. Probably didn't recognise crucial patch of the game where I needed to stay in and be there and either, you know, build a partnership with someone and take it a bit deeper or just hang around for a bit longer and get through a tough patch. So, you know, a few sort of scores, 30, 40, 60, 80 could have turned into, you know, bigger ones. And that's what the best players do. So, you know, I've looked at my game a lot over the winter and reflected back on the summer. And that would be the biggest thing. You know, you look at your best players and if they go big, they go very big. You know, they don't get to 60, 80 and give it away. So, you know, it sounds fairly straightforward, but, you know, I've been working on that quite a lot and trying to find a way that how I'm going to be able to do that going into next season.
Absolutely. Well, that's very, very promising for the Worcestershire fans out there listening to today's podcast. And fingers crossed, Jack, that you do get some big scores next season. We'll be watching along with anticipation here at the County Cricket Podcast. Maybe try and save them for the non-Warwickshire games. That's all I'll say. But obviously, I'm going to say that as a Bears fan. But I will look forward to that, Jack. Should be an interesting season in 2022. But before we talk about this upcoming season, in terms of your aspirations, your ambitions, and I suppose the club's wants and needs for this season as well, I'm guessing silverware will be up there. We do, of course, have our Twitter questions. Now, as I said at the start of the podcast, Jack, some very, very interesting ones indeed. We'll start with this first one from Mr. Ferguson. I don't think that we've had this question ever on the podcast. So, Mr. Ferguson, well done. This is completely unique, Jack. So bear that in mind. This question from Mr. Ferguson, who is a Worcestershire fan, is if you could have only one flavour of crisp for the rest of your life, what would you choose and why?
Right, I wasn't expecting that.
Neither was I. But here we go.
One flavour of crisp. Maybe a bit of a rogue one. Maybe, I don't know, people might not like this. I'm going to go prawn cocktail. I'm going to go prawn cocktail. I'm a big fan of a prawn cocktail crisp.
I can respect that.
So I'm going to go with that.
Which one? Walkers?
Walkers, yeah. It'd be Walkers, yeah. Absolutely.
To be honest, I'm guessing the Worcestershire fans, they might say Worcestershire sauce. If they're being incredibly biased.
Not for me. I'm going prawn cocktail.
I kind of respect that choice. I'm just trying to think of any other ones. Ready salted's a bit plain, isn't it, to be honest?
Yeah, a bit generic. Maybe a bit boring, I think.
Yeah, lots of people go for salt and vinegar, cheese and onion. Mm. I can't really think of any more flavours, to be honest. My goodness, it's a good job I don't call myself the crisp connoisseur. Crikey, I'd be in a lot of trouble. No, prawn cocktail. There you go, Mr. Ferguson. So, Jack, if you're ever stranded on a desert island, we'll airdrop some walkers in for you. Some prawn cocktail crisps. I'm moving on to our second Twitter question from a former guest here at the County Cricket Podcast. And I just want to give him a nice shout out because he's a great guest, George Rhodes. Go and follow him on Twitter. He is an absolute delight and a very, very funny bloke. Mm-hmm. But I'll speak about rogue questions, Jack, ones that we've never had on the podcast. I'm not sure we're ever going to have this on the podcast again, but this from George Rhodes. How many pairs of socks can you fit in your ears?
I knew it was going to be something like that. It's a great question. I mean, it's he's not being very specific there, is he? He's not giving me a size of sock, a type of sock. I'm going to go with one in each, if that pleases him. One in each ear. I knew it'd be something like that. I'd say him and Darren Mitchell probably get stuck into it. Yeah, so I've got rather large ears. Darren Mitchell calls me Martin Clunes, is like my lookalike. So, yeah, a bit more background on that for you. But no, it's a silly question, George. we'll go with one in each.
There you go, George. Again, a question I never thought I'd be asking on the Counts Cricket Podcast, but here we are. We've seen it today as we live and breathe. And Jack, before we go on to 2022, then we do just have one more segment, actually, which I didn't mention at the start of the podcast. And that is, of course, TCCP teammates. So for those who don't know how this works, basically, I've got an assortment of questions for Jack to answer about the teammates that he shares a dressing room with at New Road. So, Jack, this is an opportunity to get your own back on some of the players at Worcestershire. I'm not sure if your name's cropped up too many times, to be fair. I think the Worcester boys have been quite nice. So bear that in mind, right?
I will.
But Jack Haynes, are you ready for TCCP teammates? Fantastic. Well, we kickstart today's segment with an absolute classic here on the County Cricket Podcast, and that is the teacher's pet. Who at New Road is always hanging around the coaches, per se?
I'm going to go with Adam Finch here. Just Adam Finch, just always sort of there and thereabouts and getting involved and sticking his hand up. So I'm going to go with Adam Finch, I think.
Is he a bit of a badger?
Can be.
I'd Secret say, yeah, badger. Can
be. Yeah, I think so. A quiet one.
The undercover badger. I think that's what some people call them. Fair enough.
Exactly.
Would there be anyone else? What about yourself, Jack? Would you be up there or not?
I do love the game of cricket, I have to say. I reckon a few of the lads might have said me there, but obviously can't say myself, so I'm going to go with Adam Finch.
Fair enough. Sound logic. Moving on to the next one. Again, a classic to get on to our next question. Who's Mr. Hard as Nails in the Worcestershire dressing room? Who would you never want to mess with?
Mr. Hard as Nails. Well, it's a tough one. I don't think there's many. Mr. Hard as Nails. I'm going to go with a new lad this year. I'm going to go with Ben Given. He signed him from Cheshire up north. He's a big lad, and I just don't think I'd want to. I don't think I'd want to mess with him really. Up north, built quite big in stature. Big fast bowler, charges in all day. And I don't think I'd want to meet him down a dark alley, really. I don't think I'd be coming off best there.
Yeah, by that description, probably wise not to meet him in a dark alleyway. Yeah. Is he good, though, actually? You know, this could be some good insight, actually, for the Worcestershire fans about Ben Gibbon. Has he been impressive for the club so far?
Yeah, he has, very. Because I hadn't seen too much of him last year, but from what I've seen in the nets, obviously left armour and to... as a variety to our attack and runs in all day, swings it both ways, which is great. Very exciting prospect for us at New Road.
Well, there you go, Pairs fans, a TCCP exclusive. Although, to be fair, my Lancastrian co-host, Joe, he plays his cricket up in Cheshire, and he said he's a serious prospect as well. So we'll have to wait and see. Could be an interesting prospect for the West Midlands County heading into the 2022 season. Moving on to our next one, Jack. The first of our musically themed questions here on today's podcast. Who is the dressing room DJ at New Road and what are their choices of tunes?
It varies, I suppose. Ben Cox, I'd say, is the main dressing room DJ. He's your go-to man. If there's a bit of a change-up, maybe Brett D'Oliveira takes on. He's going to be skipper now, which might just relinquish those duties off him a little bit more. He might have, fields to set and things like that to focus on more so than the music choice. But no, Ben Cox is he tries to get the lads up and about and lift us up on it after a tough day in the field, for example. So he's pretty good. Genre of music, I wouldn't say he's got one genre, just uplifting, quite poppy, I suppose. Quite charts, but no, he's good. He's good. I'll give him his credit. He's quite good at lifting the lads up.
Fair play. And again, that is something which crops up every single time on this podcast for any aspiring dressing room DJs out there. Variety, variety, variety. Don't just play one genre. Everyone has different tastes. Everyone wants a different flavour of music. It's important, as Jack Haynes has just attested to here on today's podcast. And in terms of the second one, Jack, there could be a few options here, actually. I'm not sure how musically gifted the Worcestershire boys are, but our next question is the karaoke king at New Road. Who would you say is the absolute best when it comes to hopping on the karaoke machine?
Karaoke king. Oh, that's a good one. I'm gonna go with Dylan Pennington, purely because he's always they do their like bowlers warm up in the morning and they have a stretch in like the room with the television on and they put music on in the pre-game and he's always singing some sort of Disney song or and you can just hear it as soon as you walk in the morning and it does my head in. So I'm gonna go with him, not because he's a great singer, more because he's the only really person I hear sing frequently.
It's funny you mentioned Dylan. He didn't say that to us on the podcast. He didn't mention himself.
No, he wouldn't have. He's not very good, that's why.
You know what, though? He's trying. And if he enjoys it.
He does.
Oh. it's a bit of a shame, really. In hindsight, we could have got him to sing one of them. But one of those. The opportunity's gone. Dylan, if you're tuning in, we'll get you on for part two. We'll get you... What's his go-to Disney songs? I mean, that wasn't something I was expecting, to be honest.
I'm not good at Disney. What's it called? I'm not going to know it, but they're just... I can't hear him singing them, but I can picture him singing them to me. They do my head in.
We'll have to find out. Listeners, we will find out what Dylan Pennington's go-to choice of Disney song is. Again, something which I wasn't expecting to say on today's podcast, but here we are. Live in the flesh. Moving on to our next one, Jack. This is very much a cricket-themed one. And this will be interesting, actually, to hear who this is. Who do you say is the most likely to get timed out during a game? Who's very slow getting the kit on?
It's a really tough one, because I don't know if there's anyone that stands out. I'm going to go with Dylan Pennington again. And purely because he's the sort of person, and he's probably one of the only people in the team who'd like forget something when he walked out the bat, so he'd forget his helmet or his pads or his thigh pad, and he'd be an amateur rush, so he'd have to come back in, obviously find the piece of equipment, and I think that might cause him to get timed out. So I'm going to say Dylan Pennington, because he's definitely got that in him, and I'm not sure how it's not happened before.
That'd be absolutely hilarious if he walked out to bat and forgot his helmet
or his bat.
It is the nightmare, though. Jack, I have to ask this, actually, because this is a recurring theme on the podcast. Have you ever had the nightmare of going out and getting a piece of kit?
All the time. I have that one, and then I've had a few, actually. I have the one where you're running between the wickets, and you can't physically get to the other end. So you're going to get run out, but you can't physically get to the other end. And I have those two on, like, a cycle, usually, through the season. Just, like, getting out or getting timed out. So, yeah, I suppose life of playing cricket.
it comes up so often. It must be horrible, to be fair, if that actually
it really is.
Goodness really me. Is. I mean, that is something we don't want to happen. And obviously, fingers crossed, it doesn't happen to anyone in the county circuit this season.
Absolutely.
Goodness me. Yeah, we don't want to be seeing that this summer. Moving on to the next one, Jack. This really is the classic one at the County Cricket Podcast. You will have to throw at least one person under that metaphorical bus. Who are the best and worst dressed at Worcestershire County Cricket Club?
Yeah, well, I've got my worst dressed is, as he comes really, I'm going to go with Jake Libby for worst dressed. Just a few of the lads do get stuck into him. Very tight T-shirts. I'm going to go with Jake Libby. He does cop a little bit of stick in general, does Libs. But I'm going to go for him, definitely him for worst dressed. And then best dressed, I'll probably give it to Brett D'Oliveira. Quite trendy, seems to know his fashion. So I'm gonna go for Brett D'Oliveira.
Yeah, some decent choices there. I think Jake Libby has come up on a few occasions.
Yeah, I'm really not surprised.
and to be fair, Brett clearly has got some style. So fair play to him, carries it off quite clearly. And
yeah, he does.
Aside from the fashion, I have to ask about Brett D'Oliveira. For anyone who's seen his Instagram, right, what's the whole story with his Instagram stories? Like, every single time I load Instagram, it comes up and he puts on, like, something from a meme page. Is there a reason why he does that?
No, they're just quite funny, I think. I always have a little chuckle when I look at them. I'm not sure, really. I mean, you'd have to ask him. He'd be a good guest, I think. But, no, he's quite—he's a very funny guy, and I think he's just trying to keep his followers entertained.
Well, obviously they are entertaining. As I said, myself and Joe, we first stumbled on them a while back and we thought, oh goodness, has he been hacked? We thought he'd been hacked by someone and they were putting all these like really weird memes up there. And then it was on a daily basis. And then we spoke, I think it was to Dylan actually. And Dylan told us that, no, it's actually Brett posting those. So yeah, we'll have to get him on the podcast to,
yeah, to explain. To explain that one.
Yep, 100%. And actually talking of Brett and his memes, again, something I didn't expect to say on today's podcast, but who would you say, Jack, is the dressing room joker at New Road? Would it be Brett's, or is there someone else who takes those practical jokes to the next level?
I mean, it would have definitely been Darren Mitchell if you'd have asked me last year. But as he's not a teammate as such anymore, it would be Brett, yeah. There's just always something going on when Brett's sort of like, you know, roaming around, especially when him and Mitch are sort of together. He just has that sort of guilty look on his face. So, yeah, it's got to be Brett.
No surprises there at all. No surprises there. Again, his name and Daryl Mitchell. Daryl Mitchell. Again, I'm not going to go into it. I think he told us some of the pranks he pulled. Quite inventive.
He at the end of last year, obviously, he was going. And I can't remember what I did to him, but it was something tiny, like, I don't know, changed the temperature in the shower while he was in it, and he went really cold. Something small like that, you know, pretty minuscule as a practical joke. He decided to permanent mark the front of all of my cricket bats. And I literally couldn't get off. I tried everything and couldn't get off. So still a couple of them have still got pen on them. I've had to reproface, you know, four or five bats before heading over to South Africa. So that's the sort of practical joke that he comes up with.
If you don't mind me asking, what did he put on them? Was it just squiggles, or did he, at least
the autographs? No, there was a couple of autographs, a couple of just like messages getting stuck into me. There'd have been one about my ears, and a couple of other ones really, just to add insult to injury.
God, that doesn't surprise me at all with Daryl Mitchell. Really, really funny bloke. And again, it's a shame that he's no longer in that dressing room. Served Worcestershire so brilliantly for years and quite clearly is missed in that dressing room. But crikey, that is some payback in it for changing the temperature of a shower.
Exactly. I thought that, to be honest. Man.
I'm not surprised. How much did that cost in terms of getting the bats redone?
It was more the time that it took for sort of the effort and the work it took. I've sorted them just out just about now, anyway.
I'm making a note of that right now. Never mess with Daryl Mitchell.
Exactly.
Yeah, probably the most pertinent lesson we've learned on today's podcast, to be honest, especially for the Worcestershire boys. But moving on to our final question of today's teammate segment, Jack. This is an interesting one. And it used to be I'm a celebrity based, but we're on the right side of winter now. Summer is fast approaching. And as people here in the UK know, there is quite a popular reality TV show, which is on our screens in the summer. And that is, of course, Love Island. So, Jack, who would you say would be the most likely in that Worcestershire dressing room to appear on Love Island?
Oh, that's a good one. Most likely Love Island. Oh, that's a tricky one. It's a couple of just throwing their names in the hat. I'm gonna go with Josh Dell. He's my flatmate back in Worcester, and he just we do watch it. We watch it religiously every summer, and you can just tell he sat there thinking that he'd go quite well on it. So I'm going to go with Delhi, and he fancies himself as, you know, he'd go quite well on it. So I think I'd go with him.
Fair enough. We'll have to ask him.
I don't think he'd go very well on it, if you want my opinion. But
why not?
He seems to think he'd go really well. So.
We'll have to wait and see. If we get Josh on the podcast, we'll ask him about that, if he wants to go on or not. Obviously, for the Worcestershire fans, you don't want that happening because it is during the season.
No.
But
no.
It would be, that'd be pretty funny, to be fair, seeing a county cricketer on there. Be absolutely hilarious.
I don't think it'd be good.
No, it wouldn't. So just a message for the county pros, stay in county cricket, don't go on Love Island. Imagine Brett D'Oliveira's memes for that. My goodness.
Yeah.
He'd be prepared. But Jack, before we end today's episode, then that is the end of our teammate segment. I suppose just one final thing we have to touch upon is the start of this season. I mean, the summer is fast approaching. We're less than 2 months away now from the start of the 2022 county season. What are your personal ambitions and aspirations for this season from a personal perspective? And I also suppose from a club perspective as well, what would you like to achieve in this upcoming season?
Obviously super excited for the season. You know, it comes around every year pretty quickly. So I can't wait to get going now and, you know, get to that exciting phase where there's, you know, a couple of weeks to go and then you're playing again and then you're in the mix of it all and next thing you know, it's September. So no, so excited. And, you know, every year I think, you know, I can't wait for the cricket season to start and it doesn't get any less exciting. In terms of aspirations for the season, for the team, definitely I think it would be to get promoted into Division One. I think that's got to be our main aim as a collective. And that's, you know, an exciting challenge for us going into the year. And then in terms of the white ball stuff, you know, I think we had a strong 50 over team this year. Not losing two, well, we lost a few less than 100. But, you know, I thought we played some really good cricket at times and we just didn't quite put it together as much as we liked. So, you know, going into knockout games there would be great. And then the T20 comp, you know, you've seen the depth we've had in the T20 side in the last few years. And Matt Wade's a huge signing for us. And hopefully having Mo quite a lot for the T20s, along with just, you know, our normal sort of side and the depth of our squad. You know, you'd like to think that we'd have a really good chance of getting the finals day and going beyond. So, you know, ideally we'll have a really good season in all formats. And, you know, it is exciting at the moment to be around New Road. I think there is a buzz. And, you know, it'd be great if we could put some performances together and play some knockout cricket.
It most certainly would, Jack. And I think it goes without saying, but myself and all of us here at the Cowes Cricket Podcast are wishing both yourself and Worcestershire all the very best of luck heading into this upcoming season. It's going to be an absolute belter. I cannot wait for the 2022 season. There's so much talent on display in the county circuit this year and overseas players as well. You mentioned Matt Wade for Worcestershire. We've got Carlos Brathwaite for Warwickshire, Shaheen Shah Afridi for Middlesex, Mohammed Rizwan for Sussex. I could keep on going on. There is so much talent on display this summer. You've got some really strong teams competing across all three formats. I think it's going to be a summer to remember, and we'll have to wait and see. Who knows? Only time will tell which teams will be lifting those trophies, but we will be there to cover it every single step of the way. But Jack, I mean, that is pretty much it, to be honest, for today's episode of the Cowes Cricket Podcast. Before we say our final goodbyes for the show, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
Not massively. Pretty boring in that sense, I suppose. Just, you know, my normal social media. You can find me anywhere, really, on social media. So drop me a follow. I'm not sure how interesting a follow it will be, but I'll leave that up to you guys.
Well, there you go, folks. We'll be leaving the links to those in the description below. We'll leave the Instagram and the Twitter. So if you want to go and follow Jack, I would say you're worth it, Jack, to be honest. For the cricketing journey alone. I mean, you've got a great, great future ahead. And as I said, we'll be hearing your name a lot more, I reckon, on the Cowes Cricket Podcast for many, many years to come. But that is basically it from us two here at the Cowes Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.